morning and welcome to our meeting. It's 9 a.m. on July 1st, 2025, and time to convene a regular meeting at the Stonehenge County DUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, our Vice President, Commissioner Julieta Alterano Crosby, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Sarah DiVittorio, our Acting Chief Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolson, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices at this time. So I am going to start with a flag salute. You may join me if you like. I believe just is a flag of the United States of America.
To the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Copies of the agenda are located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. Are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda?
I have none.
Comment from the public is item two on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. A person should be recognized to speak from the sign-up cards located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. If joining by Zoom, click raise hand or dial *9 if by phone. I will call on you to speak at the appropriate time. When you're called upon and on a phone, dial *9 to unmute. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state and spell your name, and indicate where you're from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners, not the audience. If you have documents or other materials to enter into the record, hand them to the deputy clerk. We'll distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So our first agenda item is one, recognition declarations, 1A, Employee of the Month for July, Jeff Cohen. Hey, Matt, we're to introduce Jeff. Morning.
Morning, Commissioners. Tim Epp, Program Director for the Connect Up program. It is my great pleasure to recognize Jeff Coleman as our Employee of the Month. When our Connect Up program team needed someone to take on the monumental task of deploying the AMI network, 148 base stations across our entire service territory, we didn't go with the obvious choice. We went with the right one. Jeff stepped up far outside of his regular role as principal civil engineer in our substation engineering department and took on the leadership of this significant project. This was no small ask. It required coordination with many departments across the PUD, line, warehouse, telecom, transmission, legal, real estate, contracts and purchasing, and probably many more than that, just to name a few. Some of these groups he hadn't worked with before, but Jeff didn't just manage this complexity, he thrived in it. He's kept everyone informed, kept things moving forward, and tackled every challenge with professionalism and creativity. When we hit snags, Jeff brought solutions. One particularly difficult agency threatened to stall the project, but Jeff developed an alternate plan that let us keep moving ahead. Because of that and his leadership, we now have 147 of 148 base stations installed, reaching every corner of the county. Through it all, Jeff has shown an incredible calm, a positive attitude, and a deep commitment to quality. He's been described by his peers as one of the kindest, most professional, and most dedicated people they've had the pleasure to work with. And I couldn't agree more. In a word, Jeff is trustworthy. Thank you, Jeff, for going above and beyond. Not just for getting the AMI job done, but for laying the foundation for Snow Smart Grid Communications and showing us all what leadership through service really looks like. Please join me in congratulating Jeff Coleman, our Employee of the Month.
Take your photo. Okay, yeah, go on. I don't know what protocol is.
Still learning.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Oh, you get the picture. What do I? No, you have the picture. You like that?
You get to go.
Commissioner,
you
get the first. Yeah. Well, never saw. You're the boss, so what?
Okay. Well, Jeff, thank you for all your hard work. Hey, this quite a project and some interesting political challenges too. Not the normal thing you run into in an engineering thing, trying to put towers around. So thank you very much. Huge lift.
I would like to thank the board and
John Harlow for having the faith to have us install the network ourselves. So it's not something a lot of other utilities do. We're fortunate that we have a really capable in-house telecom team and line department. And by doing that, it really gave us a lot of flexibility that we needed to get through COVID and the post-COVID material delays.
Yeah.
So if we hadn't gone that year, I mean, your foresight in allowing us to do it that way really saved us in the end.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Well, I think it's also so useful when you build something yourself, because you're going to own it forever.
That's right.
You know how to fix it. You know where the you know where the switch is, where the plug is, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
The part that's likely to go out again.
And that was the other benefit. We used the feedback from our crews and our engineers to improve as we went, improve our process for installation, but also improve the design.
Yeah.
So we're able to share those improvements now with other utilities and with the vendor itself.
Well, we differentiate for other public utilities because we have the best team, right? The best employees. And thank you, Chris.
Yes.
Well, in the material that Tim provided us, I got to tell you, it was music to my ears when you commented that as an engineer, you don't usually get to step out of that engineer role, and you were able to really get into the organization in terms of a cross function.
Yeah.
I mean, hallelujah and amen. That's the part of the success of this utility, I believe.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that you saw that and you appreciated it. And I'm sure that it enabled us, enabled you and your teams to do top-notch installation. And on a side note, I saw that you were in Ecuador in America Care.
Peace Corps.
Peace Corps. So, when?
I'm dating myself. 1999.
I preceded you by a little bit. And what did you do?
I was in the engineering office and helped with water and sanitation projects.
Was it associated with the UN or?
USAID.
USAID, yeah. Okay. Well, I was a little bit ahead of you, but I only lasted 2 months because the junta collapsed.
Oh.
So and mom and dad had a hissy fit and I came home.
That's a good reason.
Well, I was in,
We all started.
I can't pronounce it. It was in a compound where there were several countries.
Oh, sure.
That were in a compound. And my uncle worked for the United Nations. So that's how I got in there. And it didn't last very long. Anyway, very interesting background. And I must tell you, Tim, you have a commissioner that's seen an epiphany. And I believe that how as unfortunate and stressful it has been on your team and everyone with the extended project, I really can see a benefit in that because you're learning. And once it's fully installed, folks will really know how that puppy works and will have probably worked out most of the kinks. So I just had to tell you, I'm on your side. Anyway, congratulations. You clearly deserve it.
Thank you.
So we have a trophy for your trophy case.
It'll be number one.
My trophy case too.
You can come back several times.
And we have $50. I think they forgot to put a zero here. No, okay.
It is a public utility.
Oh, yeah, but picture?
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Doesn't he look like a university professor? Don't you?
No, I have to say thanks to Krista Rasmussen. She always makes me look good. She's our amazing photographer.
Yeah.
Jeez.
He helps us all look good.
Yeah, I'm good. Okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate this. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Tim, it's your opportunity. If you want to say something, you
well, you can.
Okay. Well,
well, I'd like to thank Mark Owens and Bob Anderson, who couldn't be here today, for their support while I was on this temporary assignment. And also Tim Epp, Kevin Labering, and Mark Fleury for really giving us the roadmap we needed to set the project up for success. You know, that I was really fortunate to have them leading the program, and it all dovetailed in real nicely. Thank my substation engineering coworkers, many of them who came here today, just for the moral support and the ideas and encouragement, and for taking on a little bit extra load while I was on assignment here. So, and again, thank you, commissioners, and John, first letting us do it, or having us do it in-house. I think you were the one that said we're going to bet on ourselves, and it really paid off. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
There's not a picture. It didn't happen, right?
Is it close?
Thank you. Oh, my God. I have two comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public? And I was not on today's agenda. We have two people online. Let's take Wendy first. Good morning, Wendy. You have 5 minutes. Wendy, you're muted.
Hi, I'm just here to speak about the smart meter. I got a letter a couple weeks ago that said that it was coming and I don't want it. So I've asked to keep my old meter, and that apparently is not doable. I would like to know why. And considering that this apparatus infringes on my Fourth Amendment rights, I don't understand how PUD, because although it's only been a phone call or two, I don't understand how you can feel that hostility towards the public is okay. It's been very eye-opening to see how potentially not in power the people are that like you guys are not apparently in power. And above all, it's, you know, I'm not going to get into the safety. I'm not going to get into the privacy. I'm not going to get into all of the issues at hand with smart meters. But I would like to make it a point that the opportunity to keep your old meter should be a valid one that is never infringed upon, unless, you know, maybe the meter goes bad. Then I can see why you would then be forced to get one. But if there's nothing wrong with this one, you're making me pay $5 to send you a picture of it. Why am I not allowed to keep my old meter? That's it.
Thank you for your comment. Next up, we have Gayla. Gayla, you're muted.
Good morning, commissioners. I want to talk to you about trees. As you may know, there was a large community outcry in Edmonds when over 100-year-old tree was cut down for questionable reasons. As a result, there is now a new temporary ordinance restricting the cutting down of such trees. During the controversy over Big Red, which was the name of the tree, members of the community said that if somebody wanted to have a tree cut down, regardless of how old or beautiful it was, all they had to do was call the PUD and they could get it cut similarly immediately, because they had just cut down a large tree just a block or two away from Big Red. And to me, that did not make sense, because the PUD I know has a very strong support of trees process. I know that you're very careful about where you plant trees, and you're very careful, at least what I have seen. But I'm very concerned that there, that first of all, that that information is going around in the community. And secondly, I do want to know, what is your process for determining when trees are to be cut down, and when they're not to be cut down, when they need to be saved? And with this new temporary ordinance in Edmonds, definitely, if there is a large heritage tree, that that will need to have some special requirements in case in case it is a landmark tree. So I will call later and talk with whoever is responsible for the sort of the tree application in the PUD. So anyway, just want to let you know that I will be calling, and that I'm just very interested. I'm a great supporter of trees, especially heritage landmark trees. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else in the room who should make a public comment? Okay. Seeing no more, we'll move to item 3 on our agenda. Consent agenda. 3A, approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of the 2025. 3B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. And 3C, consideration of certification slash ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? So please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any hands online. Any questions or comments, commissioners?
I have none. And I don't need a response. The only thing I saw on a couple of them was our bids are coming in lower, significantly lower in one case than our estimates, which is great. But sometimes that can indicate what's going on in the answer. Don't need an answer. It was just an observation.
Yeah.
So I have no other questions.
Sure. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye, and all those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Next is item 4, our CEO General Manager briefing and study session. This item is for the board and the CEO General Manager to discuss issues among ourselves and PUD staff. John Harlow will facilitate. Good morning, John.
Good morning, commissioners. First up, we have our media update and own Aaron Sweeney. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners. Aaron Sweeney, Manager of Communications and Marketing, here for the media report as usual. Wanted to highlight this story that ran in the Herald a couple weeks ago. This was really something that we'd want to get out there and talk about, since we did change our contract, or we're moving towards changing our contract, and really thinking that it'd be really good for our customers to understand why, the reasons why we're doing this. And Kelly Stickney did a great job with going out with Scott Spar, Andrew McDonald helped out, Garrison Marr was huge with this story, and kind of educating the reporter as she went, you know, going out to Jackson, taking her on a tour, got really behind the scenes on what we do for not only our own hydro, but how that will impact now kind of our BPA contract going forward. So just thought it was a really good story and a good chance for us to talk about some really significant changes for us and our customers.
We're pleased to see the story.
Yeah. This story in the Snohomish Tribune was a result of an Everett PD arrest of a former employee. You know, we worked really closely with Everett PD on this, the state auditor's office, in reporting this out. Again, came up really quickly with some talking points, key messages for this. And Kelly worked with the reporter really closely again on this. Felt like the story came out as good as possible. Just a selection of stories that have kind of shown up lately. John had a nice story in the APPA on their online blog, kind of showcasing his keynote speech as he took over chair, talking about really a positive safety culture, something we've heard a lot about, but I think it was really nice to have that kind of out there in the industry and really from John's perspective. So I thought that was a nice story. Tree Power, the deadline was coming up. I think it was on June 10th. We put out a press release, put out some information in the Everett Herald, and the program received 4 applications. I'm not going to credit all of our media work on that, but I just thought it was nice to give that program, which is a really interesting and innovative program, some pub in the local papers.
I have a question about the program. Usually, how many applications do we receive?
That's a really good question. Sherry Miller helped us on this one. I think that in the past, they've received about 3 to 4. I think that they went ahead with 3 last year. There's one in Mukilteo, one in South Everett near our community solar array, and then they did the one near Centennial Trail in Arlington. So they did 3, and then now they've done 4. I think one of them is one of the applications that came through last year that wasn't completed. That's coming over again to this year.
Thank you.
I'm not an expert, but that's as much as I know. And then finally, this is a little bit old, but RTO Insider did a really big story about the BPA's decision to go Markets Plus. Adam Cornelius, you know, Joe Fina, a lot of our folks have been integral in that process. Adam had a nice comment in there in the story, and I thought that was really nice. Publications. David Kruger worked with our HR department, Jenny Harrington, on a nice story kind of about our approach to mental health and how we really have enveloped that into our overall safety culture, that it's not just physical safety, but it's also mental health safety. And so this was a really nice story in the June NWPPA bulletin. And this isn't in here, but the July bulletin also has a comment or kind of a small brief on the CES roundtable that John Hoffman's group put together recently, that was really nice, just kind of highlighting all the work that went into that and how it's nice to get peer utilities together to talk about some of these big issues. Then finally, The Wire. Just wanted to highlight what we've been talking about recently to our customers. This is June and July. June, we talked about Community Energy Fund. The Community Energy Fund has been running a little bit short in recent months. So wanted to get some information out there in front of our customers to talk about the importance of that program and how it really helps some of our low-income customers. Other things we focused on in June was wildfire info, talking a little bit about PSPS and wildfire mitigation, all the work that we do, and then also some updates on Connect Up. July, I really wanted to highlight all the summer projects we're doing. We usually do this time of year. It's great to just highlight all the crews and all that they're doing. Got a little bit in there about vegetation management and kind of doubled down on all that work that they're doing that prepares us for not only storm season, but also for now for wildfires. And then also highlighted our award-winning lineman who went down to LA and got first place.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Impressive.
That is it from me. Questions?
I have a comment. I mean, I really appreciate your presentation and the updates. It's very nice, everything that you bring to us all the time. But it is anyway somehow that we can collaborate with perhaps Latino Herald or other media that are out there. They are in different languages. I mean, again, it's not Snohomish, it's so diverse, the public that we serve. So kind of nice to see these maybe perhaps open opportunities and the applications for the trees or whatever is going on. I mean, people, sometimes I receive phone calls to ask me like, hey, where I can call or how I can apply for my bill because I cannot pay this. And yeah, it's still that little gap and disconnection with these underserved communities. They speak other language and,
yeah,
you know, I mean, how we can provide that.
I think it was back in April I met with the editor of the Latino Herald. So he's on our list now for getting press releases. And so we talked about a little bit about doing a story kind of going into storm season or something where it's very specifically targeted to, you know, that community.
Thank you. Yeah. It is very unfortunate for all the Latino community in Washington State since last year they shut down the Univision.
Yeah.
Univision was the only channel they connect across the state. And right now it's like, you know, different small media, they try to do the best and put all the best communication or information for us.
Yeah, we're always open to any channels. But yeah, we met back in April and we're trying to go forward, you know, trying to figure out some ideas.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent job as usual, Aaron.
And I will say, I saw that tree thing multiple times in multiple places, so.
Yep. All right. Next up is our Snow Smart quarterly update and Evan Lavery. Morning, Evan.
Morning, John. Good morning, Commissioners. Grateful for the opportunity to provide you our quarterly update on the Snow Smart program. My name is Kevin Lavering, Program Director for that program. I'm here with Susie Oversee, who's our one of our program managers on the program, and excited to have her here. As we're kind of tradition now, we're starting to have the PMs help out with our commission presentation. So she'll be helping out with our status update today. And I do want to say Jeff Colon, great. I was so excited to see him nominated. And when you're talking about the glasses he wore, I think that's his alter ego. I think he wears those glasses and when he takes them off, he's really Superman. Tim and I both worked with him for a while. It's just phenomenal. It was wonderful to work with. And we're grateful for him on Snow Smart also, because the DA distribution automation system uses that communication system that he installed for us. So we're really grateful for his work. All right. So last time we presented was our quarterly update on March 18th. And so today's presentation is pretty much a quarterly update. So to keep you updated on what's going on within the program and to be informed of its current status and next steps that we have. So our agenda today, I'll be covering the program updates regarding this schedule, our status and budget, and we'll also talk about a tariff assessment that we did on the program. And then Susie Oversby will be providing our project updates for the various projects within the program and next steps. So as far as our program schedule, we are on schedule right now. You see what we call swim lanes, these three swim lanes, those horizontal Gantt chart description there. The first project, the DA project, is currently working on field deployment planning. And so we're putting together work packages, permitting, so that we can install the reclosers throughout the district. We have 900 of those being installed. And then in parallel with that, we have the ADMS phase one and phase two projects taking place. First phase one, and the DA project will be installing the equipment out in the field, and then the ADMS project is installing the software that will control that equipment. So we have both of these efforts taking place in parallel with each other. So when we have our equipment out in the field, we will have our controlling systems. They'll be ready at the same time. We'll be able to test those out. As far as our program status, program is on schedule. A few updates on what's currently happening. So we submitted our quarterly report. So every quarter we have a large batch of reports that we submit to DOE to account for the work that took place to confirm that we're on schedule, that we're on budget, that we're meeting all the milestones. And so we're on schedule with that and had that submitted, and they're happy with our reports. We also received our second cost share reimbursement from Department of Energy. So that's good. The system's still working, getting reimbursements. And we actually received our third cost share since these slides were submitted. So we're happy about that. So that process is working well. And our fourth cost share reimbursement has been submitted for processing. So we expect that so far we've received $300,000 back from the Department of Energy. And over the next couple months, it's going to be close to another million that will be submitted, reaching back to us. We also completed a recent Department of Energy data request. So this was something new. Back a year and a half ago when the grant was applied for, there was a lot of documentation that was put together regarding engineering approach, budget, what kind of schedule, who's going to staff it. A lot of work went into that before it got approved. This new data request was a similar lift to that. A lot of information was requested. They're vetting the projects that are out there that are covered by grants. And so they're doing the same thing with us, of course. And fortunately, we have all the records, we have all the data, information. We just had put it together in a different format. The team did a great job on top of their projects that are already managing. We were able to get this information submitted on time. And now Department of Energy will be, over the next few months, they'll be reviewing this data from all the utilities and companies that receive grants to let us know if they have any questions. So far, no questions yet. But we're just still waiting for any other inquiries that they may have. Yes.
So this is just reformatting what we've already submitted. Was there supplemental data?
Yes.
And I don't want to get technical.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. You don't have to worry about that with me. With this, we've learned a lot in the last year and a half along the program, during the program. And so they're asking for more information as far as they want to see, okay, is this program progressing? What have they actually done? They're asking for our company finance, for the utilities financials and such. So they're looking deeper in some ways than the application was itself. But just kind of doing a re-vetting of all the work that's taken place out there.
Like that's, I would think, should have been done in the first round. The federal government should have made sure that the entity that they were giving a grant to was financially sound.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Thank you.
Yes, you bet. You bet. Let's see, reviewing. Okay, yeah, and grid mod. So that's a new term I learned just a little bit ago. So we're looking at reviewing our grid modernization approach. So this is an approach utilities take to support ADMS projects that is part of our project, the DA side of our project, OMS, the outage management system. So all these systems that are working together with SCADA, there needs to be kind of a product owner in a way. We did this with Connect Up with Adam Peretti's group with AMI Technology. So who's going to keep that product alive after the project is completed? And, you know, overseeing releases of new software, looking at new functionality, and coordinating that throughout the district to make sure that we're keeping the system fresh and up to date. And so we're talking about a strategy right now on how to do that. So more to come on that. We just want to make sure that's in place when the program is completed. But it's always good, just like we did with Adam Peretti, have that person identified early so that they can be part of the project too. All right, so as far as upcoming activities, continue to monitor potential tariff impacts, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. We will continue to look for feedback from the Department of Energy regarding the data requests that we submitted. We have a yearly review of the overall program with the Department of Energy, looking at all the milestones that were completed, just to confirm, yes, you were on schedule. So we have that planned, big session with them planned for September. And then we'll continue our bi-weekly check-in with the Department of Energy. We have, we're seeing one of our key resources retired and they've been replaced, but our main project manager that we're coordinating with is still working there and we're still coordinating with her right now.
Oh, at DOE.
Yes, at DOE, yes.
And then, yes, the other question for you. So, you know, our other big technology connect, that one I sort of understand. I understand the thing we're doing, these we're building out, putting in place. On this program, I don't quite understand how much of it is things that are going to be on poles or switch yards or, and how much of it is software.
Yes.
And I saw the light come back on when they did the test for Congressman Larson.
Yeah.
Okay, there was a light went off and then a light came back on with no without any touching anything. But
yes.
Beyond that, I'm just
well, hopefully we're not turning any lights out.
Yeah.
With the program. But it's a good mix of software and hardware. And when I say the hardware, it's these physical switches that are going to be out there and working our fault location isolation and restoration, the FLISR, the wildfire mitigation pieces. And so we'll have this hardware out there, the switches that will be able to open and close electrical connections that are out there. And so if the lights go out, hopefully this will help minimize how broad of an area that is out. But doing that with these switches out there, they're not thinking on necessarily on their own. Okay, they have software in them, but we have centralized software, which will be part of our AEMS system, part of our SCADA system, our outage management system, all this together. We will be doing a lot of the thinking along with, you know, humans as part of that too, part of that thinking process also. So it's some existing systems that we have that we're replacing that need to be updated. And then this new functionality that I talked about will be added on top of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Does that help out?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And were you asking for, is there any way to have like a demo of how it works or?
No, I'm just asking, I guess, you know, are we putting out 10,000 switches?
That'd be cool.
And the other part of the money is going towards the software. I just don't know the caliber of the $70 million project.
Yes.
How much of it is for hardware? And how much of it then to run the hardware, yeah. Run the whole system?
Yeah.
I guess it doesn't matter.
To answer that.
I actually would be, because that's something, you know, I'm scratching my head on AI and stuff like that. But that's one thing. I mean, in general, I get it. But I'm not quite sure how this all
works. We could provide that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And for me, it's not a high priority because this goes on until 2029. But... And it would be very helpful for me if I could actually hear and see.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
You can go in the room, you can turn the lights off.
We'll have a smart people on the program that could do that for us. Okay. Roughly half of it is around the hardware side of it, of the budget over. So our budget is $75 million. About half of that is for the hardware side of it. The hardware itself, you know, $10, $20 million, and a lot of the installation costs that are associated with that. Software, similar heft to that, that's about $30, $35 million for that project. So a lot of integration work. I mean, it's a five-year program, so it's very complex systems that are being replaced. So it's about a 50-50 split that way, but we can do some kind of demo or we kind of did a roadshow with customer and energy services last month and had a sit down for about an hour and just explain more about the program and answered questions.
It's interconnects with the core of our business.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Huge system. So I don't need to play with a demo. I just have to draw a picture on black.
Yeah, we can come up with
absolutely
with a presentation to that, but don't think the folks down at ECC are sitting behind the desk flashing the light.
You don't know, we're not there.
That's part of that advanced functionality.
I guess fundamentally what would be nice to know is what do we have now and how do we respond with what do we get before we start building the system? And then what do all the improvements make? How does it change how we deal with outages or daily operations?
Yeah.
It's sort of that's the picture, right?
Yeah.
Kind of it's a big what it's a hope. Big lift.
Yes.
Yeah. And the grant helps, but we're still spending a lot of our own funds.
We've received a piecemeal kind of.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So I got connect up down.
You got that.
I got that now. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, we'll put together a presentation, but it's simply current state is if we have an outage, feeder level outage or a fuse level outage, individual customer, we have to send a serviceman out to assess that.
Okay.
This technology will do the assessing, identifying where the fault is, and then automatically operate the devices to isolate that particular section of feeder or that particular fuse and customer, and then re-energize everything that can be safely re-energized. That's the crux of it. And that's the whole automation part of it.
Yeah. John Heap has a good presentation that we've shared with in the Java Jive last month. They call it Java Jive.
John Hoppin, there you go.
And we had a lot of fun. I don't drink Java, but I had a good time.
I jived with it.
So we had a good a chance for him to share kind of an illustration of how it works, you know, step by step. And I think that will really help because it is a lot. It's very complex. But once you start to see it, then it's like, okay, now it makes sense.
Including what the benefit to the customer.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we look forward to it. All right. So budget. So we're currently tracking to $75 million. Our original budget was $74.2 million. So we're currently tracking $800,000 over. This is due to a decision we made originally in the project budget. We were planning on using internal resources for all of our kind of repetitive work around putting together work packages, permitting. Working with the cities to get those permits in place. And it was decided that we needed to contract that out because there was other work that our engineers needed to focus on. And so this kind of repetitive work, we have a contractor to help out with this. So that resulted in an additional $800,000 that we would need on the program.
We don't have any contingency on this one, or did we decide contingencies? Wait, girl. Okay, that's the side part. I didn't ask that question. Please.
Yeah. We didn't talk about a contingency. So I like to try to keep it within budget. So we will work on other ways to the rest of the program, definitely within budget. So we will look for opportunities. This is spread over 5 years. And so we'll look for opportunities to contain that.
My concern, I think I've said this before, philosophy around contingencies, if everybody builds in contingencies, now you've got this significant chunk of dollars that we can't allocate the project.
Yeah. Yes.
I'd rather set the budget, you know, have as an accurate of a budget and a forecast as we can. We execute to that. If we see variances or other situations that are arising that are causing us to go under or over, then we can adjust and get more work done or pull back in other areas where we need to adjust.
Okay.
Well, the other thing that strikes me is this is a long project, and mm-hmm. technology improvements may yep. happen during the project that yes. we may decide to take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be possible.
Yep.
Yeah. And this is, as John mentioned, this is the budget we really feel we can meet that we're working towards. It's a realistic budget. And I have to apologize on the current spend, the M fell off of that. And so we're not currently spending $3.76. We're at $3.76 million.
I don't know what happened to it.
All right. My fault, though. All right. Tariff assessment. So we're interested, okay, with the changing tariff environment, what's going on? We want to at least take a pulse of the equipment that we are purchasing and how is that impacted by potential tariffs. And so looking at these four main areas are three-phase reclosers. John Heap talked to the manufacturer and distributor. Vast majority of the components in this equipment is in America. So Very low risk of tariff impacts from this. And right now, it's such a low percentage. They're not planning. If tariffs are applied to them, they're not planning on passing those on to the customers. So they're telling us right now. Yeah. Census radios, we did get a communication on those. The radios themselves are about $13,000 to $15,000. There is a small portion of components that would be impacted by tariffs. Represents about a $20 increase per radio, so it's about $18,000 impact on the project. Single phase reclosers, right now it's still TBD. The project team is still evaluating different reclosers out there, and so tariffs will definitely be a factor in that decision and the tariff risk, so more to come on that one, but it's just not known yet. Some are in the U.S., some are in Germany that I know of, yeah. So we pick the U.S. ones, then low impact. We're looking for the right equipment, though, too, so that'll have to be part of that decision. And computer and telecom equipment, we're looking good there. So no anticipated impacts from tariffs. All right, any questions so far on the program portion? Okay, we have so our individual project update. Susie Hoversby will be providing that update.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. Susie Hoversby, program manager for in Customer and Energy Services, and I have the privilege of representing our project management team today. We have four kind of core projects under SnowSmart. I oversee our external engagement project, so I'm not a technical expert, so please bear with me as I move through these updates. I'm kind of the reverse.
That what you're saying.
Yeah, there we go. That's the benefit, right? Kind of the reverse check.
Either are we.
My third cup
of coffee.
This is
cool. So, I'll start with our distribution automation infrastructure project that John Heap oversees. In this last quarter, kind of one big milestone was that he was able to hand over the DAI control to our energy control center. And this was a great example of organizational change management. He compiled a memo that all 18 impacted parties signed, and the ECC now it's DA is turned on for ECC so that they have remote control over all of the tested DA devices. So that automation piece of SnowSmart's really starting here. We received our first three-phase reclosers in June. It's a little bit behind schedule. They were supposed to come in March. But the vendor has assured us that they will be back up on schedule by mid-summer. John's been really busy with kind of initial engineering workshops throughout the district. He's had 27 of 31 total engineering designs that are now complete, and 10 have been reviewed with field personnel. Kevin alluded to this earlier, but that consultant contract that will be providing kind of streamlined services with permitting and work sketches, work order management, and taking that burden off of PUD employees, that is nearing signature by the end of June. So maybe it's already done. If not, it will be very soon. So moving forward, John and team will be establishing kind of the dedicated communication between our data centers and census data centers, and that will dramatically reduce the occurrence of communication lost alarms. So that's a good thing. We'll be testing single phase reclosers. So the single phase reclosers are what are going to help us implement our wildfire mitigation piece of SnowSmart. And so that's that will be deployed in by the end of 2026, but that testing will be happening in the coming months. And looking forward to onboarding and training the consultant on various district standards of permitting, also PII management, personally identifiable information. And lastly, there will be a big focus and push on deploying equipment. So in total, we'll be getting about 900 pieces of equipment installed out in the field. By the end of this year, we'll be receiving more than 50 reclosers, and then that'll be ramping up over time. But it'll be really important that we get in the practice of installing those as soon as they come in to stay on schedule.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
So we're installing the devices as they come in. Are we focusing on the East County area, the area with more potential for wildfire, to get that part done first, or what's the?
Yeah, we're kind of focusing on north and east. Sean would be able to better address this, but north and east, the far kind of east part of the county where we'll be doing the single phase reclosers with the wildfire mitigation, that's coming a little later. Right now, the three phase roller reclosers are what are getting installed first.
Thank you.
Yeah. Following on to that, the reclosers that are part of our wildfire mitigation, is that throughout our service territory or only in areas with the high concentration or the high opportunity for fires are?
We're focused on the specific areas that came out of the assessment.
Yeah, I remember.
We are at the greatest wildfire risk.
All right, thank you.
So ADMS, that's the automated distribution management system. And this is led up by Sheila Crawford. Travis Olson has a big part of this as well. So this last quarter, the ADMS team completed their second milestone with TRC, which is our consultant on ADMS. And that was focused on design workshops with system hardware and architecture and SCADA. I'm gonna skip down to GIS here for a minute. So we had to do a pretty extensive analysis of our GIS systems. It's actually AspenTech, who is the vendor, our vendor for GIS, ADMS, and SCADA, did this analysis for us and came back. It showed that our GIS data is incredibly clean, and apparently some of the cleanest that they've seen in any utility, which was really fantastic news and reflects really well on our GIS work group, as well as all the others that integrate with GIS on a daily basis. So that was really fantastic, and it saves us time and effort moving forward, because we have to have the GIS data in order to effectively implement ADMS. And a lot of times utilities have to go back and fix that.
Yeah,
and you can't overemphasize that. I mean, when I experienced in other utilities, this was always a pretty significant gap. So when you try to do, you know, upgrades or new OMS, ADMS projects, you can't do it, because that GIS information is foundational. It's what needs the whole system.
I think you've worked on it for a number of years to get it, you know, or when a crew goes out to work on something and they can't find the pole.
Yeah, the team has done a lot of great work over the last few years to try to get those updated as real time as possible, because one, from a project perspective, it's again, foundational, but daily operations, and you have, just like we were talking about, if we have an outage, and the servicemen go out there and it's not configured as what ECC is seeing on their screens, which is what is in GIS, and they have to try to figure out what the current system status is or what is going on, that's it's unsafe, and it certainly slows down restoration.
So lastly, Travis Olson has been overseeing mobility, just kind of a sub-project of ADMS. And mobility is a project that will allow our servicemen and women to access SCADA and other information systems in the field from iPads and iPhones. And right now that project is in development, and he's been organizing these road shows. He's gonna have four in total. He's completed two so far, where kind of initial mobility stakeholders are engaging with the product, kind of in this initial design phase and providing input on what works and what doesn't. And he's been going, I know, really early in the morning to catch folks before they're out in the field and just sitting down with them where they're at to go over this. And it's been very productive so far, and he's been getting a lot of good input. So we'll be continuing with that in the upcoming months. And that was kind of organizing that was a joint effort with the Joint Management Labor Committee to identify those initial stakeholders. And then kind of the training deployment will be expanded once it's further developed. So also in addition to those roadshows continuing, there will be kind of another tranche of design workshops with TRC, focusing on all the activities listed there. I don't think I need to read them all out. So that will be the major focus in this next quarter. So moving on to corporate historian. And as I understand it, this should be pretty familiar. Brad SA was here in early June with a seeking acceptance of a contract, and that was successful. So that was part of this last quarter negotiating that contract, and that's wrapped up now. Just for context, for everyone's benefit, including mine, the corporate historian takes kind of secure SCADA data and translates it into a format that's accessible to work groups who need to interact with it. So it's a really important piece of not only this project, but just kind of platforms throughout the district. And our current historian platform is out of date and no longer supported by the vendor. And so we have to switch over to this new vendor, which is called Aviva Pi. And that's the contract that you all approved in June. So in the last several months, there's been a lot of work around kind of getting ready for this new platform with a pre-environment setup, design discussions with many work groups, and then those contract negotiations. And moving forward, this is actually going to happen pretty quickly. The system will be installed starting in July and is anticipated to only last a few weeks. So we'll have a fully installed system by the end of the summer. One note, the historian is funded outside of the DOE grant contract. It's not part of that scope of work, but it's part of the overall SnowSmart umbrella. And lastly, external engagement, external relations. This is my area of focus. So as was mentioned earlier, it's important that we really have a good understanding of how this impacts our customers and explain that, get out there and explain the benefits of this project, this program. It's one that's largely kind of happening in the background, but it's incredibly consequential for our customers. So we did some tabling at the PUD block party and the North County ribbon cutting this past spring. We also coordinated with the Snohomish County Department of Emergency Management. They've had a big countywide stakeholder engagement and planning effort around community wildfire mitigation. And so we participated in two of those workshops in May with SnowSmart. And then it's been mentioned already, but SnowSmart team presented to Customer and Energy Services through their Java Jive meeting and paired up with TimEp and ConnectEp on kind of having a really good conversation with folks in Customer and Energy Services about the impacts that customers will be seeing and the positive benefits. So coming up, we'll be coordinating with Kelly Stickney and others in CorpCom around their public safety power shutoff engagement strategy as they get out into our fire-prone communities and talking about PSPS will be coming alongside to say, well, this is how we're mitigating for those shutoffs through with SnowSmart and that what our investment is there. We've been meeting with Tulalip tribes on a pretty regular basis about a number of kind of resiliency projects that we're collaborating with the tribes on. And our counterpart there is wanting to provide kind of an energy security update to their leadership, and SnowSmart will be a part of that. So that's being worked out right now. And then,
I was going to say, the Chileans, I think, received a big grant to do a microgrid project and solar arrays. Are they getting going on that?
Yes, they are. Yeah. I think they recently went out to bid for the engineering services. Alex Corey in the energy storage group has been kind of the main point of contact on that. But yeah, it's moving.
Exciting thing.
It's very exciting.
Yes, large arrays.
I think they're going to do a big part of their central offices and buildings.
They're
a decent sized campus. I think they have planned on doing that.
Right, they have a gathering hall, so that will be kind of the primary focus. And then there's just a lot of kind of ancillary. Like we keep hearing, such and such, business or service at Tulalip, but a daycare center or whatever got a solar plus storage project. So like it's kind of piecemeal, but eventually there's this greater vision of bringing it all together. Yeah. And then lastly, this is kind of I'm collaborating really closely with John Heave and others on this piece, but we're through the DA project, we're installing volt bar optimization technology and really working together to figure out how best to optimize that technology through demand voltage reduction, potentially maybe even taking advantage of some BPA programs to get some reimbursement for that.
Can I get tech volt bar? I know, what is that?
It's adjusting the voltage system wide either for conservation or to manage peak load events.
Okay, all right, thank you.
There's some good YouTube videos.
You need a term.
Any questions on our updates before we go to the next steps?
Questions?
No, thank you. Good presentation.
So coming up, next steps in July, we have quarterly reports due to DOE. I think we're starting to get those down, so that's getting smoother and smoother. Kevin already mentioned we'll be preparing for our yearly review in September with DOE. Potentially even hopefully having our Nancy, our DOE counterpart out to visit. And we'll be back in September with another quarterly update.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. No opportunity. And Kevin, thank you. Next up is the interlocal agreement, Snohomish County Bridge 214 amendment.
Good
morning, Jeff.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Jeff Kallstrom. I'm the Chief Water Operations Officer. And today I have a quick presentation about an amendment that's coming before you in a couple weeks. So the purpose of this presentation is to familiarize you with the amendment that's coming, to give you a little bit of background on it, and then to answer any questions that you might have. There are no expectations in this meeting other than ask any questions that you have. However, at the July 15th meeting, that is when we propose to bring the amendment to you for consideration. This amendment has to do with some work that the water utility is required to do to facilitate the replacement of the Jordan Creek Bridge. The one slight modification I'll make to this slide is the bridge is not actually on Jordan Road. It is coming off of Jordan Road. It is about 6 miles north of Granite Falls in the location where the arrow is, but the bridge actually goes south from Jordan Falls, and it's immediately south of, I think it's 143rd. And there's a community development that's there. That this bridge carries our water main across the Stillwater River or the Jordan Creek into that community. We serve that community from the west. So we have a loop system there. So when this comes out of service, this line comes out of service, which I believe it might be out now, it will not impact service there. It may impact quality of service over the long-term reliability, but this is a short-term project. So that is good. We do not have to take that development out of service. The county is replacing this bridge, which is the need for the work. We have a franchise with the county that requires us to replace our facilities at our own expense when needed for right-of-way roadway improvements, and that's what's happening here. The county began this project in 2021, I believe, 2022. Our initial estimate was $242,000 to replace our main. That estimate was included in the interlocal agreement in July 2023. We are now July 2025. Costs have changed. And so we are now looking at a $348,000 actual cost. So this has now been bid. That is an actual cost. It is no longer an estimate. The increase in costs due to a few different things. A change in scope was part of it, a little bit of alteration as the county finalized this design over the last 2 years and altered where we were going to be connecting and the work we were doing. But a larger part and the bulk of the increase in cost is just a result of time. Labor has gone up, materials have gone up. There was also some adjustment in the size of pipe that was going to come across, whether it was a 10 inch or a 12 inch. So we did settle on the larger 12 inch to provide maximum redundancy and reliability in that area. And so we now have an actual bid in hand. The project has been bid. And so this requires a update or an amendment to the interlocal agreement to increase the $242,000 to $348,000. And so then the request for this board is to approve that amendment when it comes forward on the July 15th meeting. So again, next steps, July 15th, you will see the amendment for your consideration, and then a project will begin later this year. Do I have any questions?
No, you clarify already a few questions, the total cost and, yeah.
Thank you. I have no question.
So I have a question. So we have another way to get water to these customers.
Correct.
Does it make sense to spend $150,000 for get redundancy to 40 customers? I mean, I don't know enough about water, so yeah. I'm supposed to know whether how needed it is or.
So it's a great question. So the supply across the Jordan Creek is actually the main supply line into this development. We do have a 12 inch pipe coming the other direction, but that was originally the redundancy.
Okay.
And so that is, we would have concerns long-term of supplying the neighborhood with just that, because that pipe is further from the main transmission line that we have, which actually goes up Jordan Creek. And for context, this development, this work is at the far northern end of our Lake Stevens integrated system. So this is kind of you're hitting the top of our system. And so,
okay. Thank you. Yeah. Any questions or follow up questions?
No. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right. Excellent, Jeff. Thank you. All right. Next up is surplus and sale of an access easement across district property in Maureen Barnes. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning. I'm Maureen Barnes, manager of real estate services.
Oh, so actually show surplus to the district.
Yeah, I missed
office next.
Oh, yes, which one? Next.
But luckily, it's still Maureen Barnes. No,
I didn't. But laughing.
I should have brought a hat so I could have dropped down. Okay, here we go. Surplus of the Arlington Community Office. So, hey, what happened? Oh, access. No, I've got the wrong header, I guess, on there. Sorry, that threw me off. It's my own fault. The purpose of the presentation is to inform the board of the upcoming request to declare surplus the former Arlington Community Office, which is located at 210 Division Street in Arlington. Answer any questions that you may have regarding the transaction. And then to let you know that we will be bringing this back to commission on the 15th of July to hold a public hearing and a vote. So a little bit on the background. We purchased the land in 1957 for $14,500. We also built the building, had it operational, I believe, at the end of that same year. Property totals just about 16,553 square feet, and it's zoned Old Town Business District by the City of Arlington. Building is single story, consists of an office and warehouse, and takes up approximately 3,000 square feet. Again, it was built in 1957. As the North County Community Office has opened, all staff, internal fixtures that were needed, and warehouse materials have all been relocated. And as you can see here, that's kind of just an overview of it. It's rocking that nice flat mid-century modern roof. All right. Vintage. So a year ago, we did have the property appraised by an outside appraiser, and it came up at about $760,000. It's been a year. What we'd like to do is move forward with having it declared surplus, listing it with an approved real estate broker. And I think once it gets listed, it's actually going to show what the actual value is once we start getting offers. And my guess is probably more than that. Though this could be considered more of a teardown just because it's not super useful. Staff have reviewed and approved the request. And again, we'll be back on July 15th to hold a public hearing and vote on the resolution. Any questions?
On the post clarification, we don't have any staff in that building.
No.
So
no
it's, staff. It's like literally empty. The building is there, but
correct.
No operations. So
correct. It's, yeah, not operational. And we've removed all of our fiber and everything that we needed to keep it up and running.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad you mentioned the potential for it selling for more than what's in our presentation. I assume that might be the case. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. We got our money's worth out of it.
Definitely. Oh. Do I hit it?
Still bring it up.
Okay.
Now we get to go on.
I know you're so excited for the first
highly anticipated.
Yeah, I know. This is really exciting stuff. So I'm still Maureen Barnes, still from Real Estate Services. let's get this puppy started. All right. This didn't throw me off. It's got the correct heading. Obviously, I use the same template. So this is to inform the board of the upcoming request to declare surplus a portion of district fee-owned land in Linwood and allow the sale of an easement to Mr. Ian McDonald, who is an adjacent property owner. Answer any questions regarding this transaction. And again, we'll be back before commission July 15th for a public hearing and vote on the resolution. So the home is located at 5701 Halls Lake Way. Mr. McDonald owns the property. And access has been across the PNT or interurban trail since the home was constructed in 1946. When the district did acquire all of that right-of-way from Puget Sound Power and Light in 1963, the owner came forward at that time and said, hey, I'd still like to use this same access, and we issued a permit for that. Subsequent owners, we just kept kind of giving them a permit, which they would pay yearly. When Mr. McDonald purchased the property in 2012, he refused to get the permit and then requested an actual easement. And the reasoning behind this, and I can completely understand, banks for lending and the county is cracking down if you don't have actual legal access. And the limited use permits are revocable. So technically, they could lose any of their access. So as you look here, you can kind of see the inner urban trail comes down, and he comes off of his property into the Halls Lake subdivision. All of the signage has been placed by the city of Linwood as they run that as the inner urban trail. So there's warnings, there's access. There was alternative access that's shown on paper, as you can see up at the upper corner there. It's not viable whatsoever. And in fact, they've done a street vacation where it does connect up at 208th Street Southwest. It's wetlands and very, very brushy and just not viable for a road. Basically, this is their only access. So he received easements from the city of Linwood and various homeowners. He did bring a suit across, suit to them, and legally he was granted the access across there. What that left was then just that little portion that goes over our property, whereas before we really couldn't give him an actual easement leading to property that he had no rights on. But once he's gotten back from the city of Linwood and from some of the Halls Lake subdivision property owners, then we can go ahead and finalize this. The proposed easement is 15 feet wide. It consists of approximately 2,000 square feet. An in-house appraisal was completed by staff, and we put the valuation at $5,500. So no district equipment, facilities, or access for us is going to be impacted. This has been the access, like I said, since 1963 when we acquired it. Staff have reviewed and approved the request. The use is for ingress egress only, and Mr. McDonald will work with the city of Linwood regarding the maintenance, because the road is not ours, regarding the maintenance and replacement of warning devices. And again, on July 15th, we will be coming back to commission to hold a public hearing and a vote on the resolution. And any questions? And I know those were both super fast, but.
Any questions for me?
I have none.
No.
Can you go back to slide four real quick?
Sure.
I want to look at that aerial. So there's a lot of places where road will cross a trail, but usually it does it at a 90 degree angle.
I agree.
And so what are these buildings? I guess that just wasn't possible. What are buildings between the trail and the road?
A subdivision around Hall Lake.
Okay.
And so it is a private subdivision. All of the roads are actually private roads. And so that was the reason he had to get access from them. The reason it goes like that, as you can see, the little road comes across into this Halls Lake Way, and that was established access. We also use it to get onto our right-of-way to inspect and whatnot. And again, City of Linwood was the one that went ahead and added the safety devices when they first started the trail in 1991. They have a new easement, which goes until 2043.
Interesting.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
All
right, thanks.
Good to see you again.
Nice to see you too. Thanks.
Excellent job, Maureen.
10:18, why don't we take about a 5-minute break back at 10:23? It is 10:23, and we're back.
All right, next up is our Connect Up quarterly update, and Tim Epp.
Commissioners, Tim Epp, Program Director for AMI, or Connect Up Program. This is a quarterly update. No decisions on the part of the board that are expected today. All questions are welcome. So we'll go over overall status, give you a deployment status, talk about our AI network, we'll hit a contract milestone I'll update you on, and then I've got an example from our ConnectUp 2.0 activities. So program status overall, we're on track with our spend as expected. Our original program budget, $93.2 million. I have a projected of $92 million. We're currently taking a hard look at that. We may come in a little bit closer to that 93 million mark. So given time, given labor increases, things like that, it looks like we are going to be creeping up a little bit, but still should be very close to the ballpark that we originally put out to you a few years back. Meter supply, I threw out some pictures here. A warehouse full of meters. We are starting to fill up the parking lot with meters. And then I also threw in a picture of our recycling bin where we recycle the old meters. So those aren't just dumped, but they are sent off for scrap value to a recycler.
That's not a trash
compactor. No, it is not a compactor. But evidence there that the team is working hard and getting out there and installing lots of meters. So, and the good news is on the meter supply projection, they are coming in. We're actually working with our vendor. They're actually sliding some of our projected deliveries into 2025, which is really good news. Good news for my finance friends. So we should be able to get those off the books sooner rather than later. And then water meters are completely delivered. So all risk is off when it comes to water meter delivery. I did keep meter supply as one of our top risks. However, I think as we start filling up the parking lot more and more, that risk is going to shift maybe towards more of a labor risk if I were to kind of rank our risks and making sure that we have enough installers, that we maintain those installers. So far, we're having really good experience with our installers. They're sticking. They're doing a great job. They love the work, which is really encouraging. And but we'll keep an eye on that. That's something that we have to keep up with and make sure that they're doing a good job and staying with it. The other is potential tariffs. So our current tariffs on USMCA, US-Mexico Canada agreement equipment is just expired. The temporary hold on that expired yesterday, but we have heard nothing yet from either administration or our vendor. So as far as we know currently on the meters, there's no new tariffs being put on theirs on the electric meters.
It's feast or famine.
If you can predict it, you can be.
I'm sorry, but I'm just curious, what do we do with the meters that we don't use?
With meters that the old meters?
Yes.
So we have a contract with the recycling company, so they will recycle those and we get a certain scrap value from them for that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
So meter deployment, we are actually just checked this morning. We're at 73,000 installed, so a little bit higher on the electric side, and water is north of 15,000 meters installed. We're currently hitting our rates of 2,000 per week for electric. Water had a banner week last week. I think they hit like 220, really good week for water. So we should be ramping up. Our opt-out rate is holding fairly steady, so no big surprises there. And right now we're pretty much wrapped up in most of our Southeast County area, but moving into Snohomish, the Three Lakes area. We're even up into South Lake Stevens on the electric meters and making our way even up to Granite Falls now. So chipping away really well. Meter deployment team is hiring like crazy, so we are not there yet. We should be fully staffed in August, and we should see that target rate of 4,000 per week getting closer and closer as we move through July and into August.
Do you know how, what fraction of that 0.31% are choosing the low-cost $5 option that the caller this morning referred
to? The vast majority. So right now, if we have a ballpark, let's say the numbers that I looked at most recently, I've got an updated set I need to factor in, but out of 290 opt-outs, 30 of them were still doing PUD read, 260 were doing self-read.
And do we know if that's working? Are they doing the self-reads and sending them?
Customers are doing the self-reads. We have had some customers that have failed to do their reads. And under board approved policy, they fold back into a regular AMI read after that. So not too many of those, but there have been some.
And nationally, these opt-out percentage is pretty low.
It's very low. We're very encouraged by that. I think we had projected a 0.5% rate. So if we, you know, kind of tease this out, this would put us in about the 1,900 to 1,000 range of opt-out customers at the end if it holds steady. Very encouraging that, you know, tells me that vast majority of our customers are on board with AMI.
And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And what happened is a customer doesn't want to have the smart meter.
So the current policy approved by the board a couple of years back is that all customers are getting an AMI meter. So the choice for opting out is whether they want to opt out of communication, the automatic communications of a meter read. And there are some other exceptions to that. Water meters are not, you can't opt out of that. If you're in an apartment, you can't opt out because you have a meter room with hundreds of meters in it. And there's a couple of other exceptions to that, but the decision approved by the board was everyone gets a new meter.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah.
And the other part of that is, you know, residences turnover. So the meter's there, that customer sells their house, then we can go out and turn it off the next customer. Right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So on the AMI network deployment, we talked a little bit about this with Jeff earlier, but we have 147 out of 148. He's working on the very last one, which is at the Olympic View water site. We have some other facilities on that site, so we're looking to add one more pole for our network antenna up there. It's been a little bit of a tricky land, you know, with the neighbors and a fence line that we've got to work around, but Jeff's got a crack team and he's working through that. So we'll have that wrapped up in August and should be able to call it good on the AMI network. It's great. Contract milestones. So part of our contract included kind of an intermediate milestone for testing our initial deployment area. This is coming much later in the program than we would have expected when we were originally crafting the contract, but we're here now. So this is a milestone that where we validate technical issues, functional issues, and do some performance testing. Testing is underway. We do have identified some communication not meeting the standard that we've laid out in the contract with our vendors. So that's something that they'll need to resolve before we're done. We have actually, it's a particular set of water meters in the Machias area that we're having a hard time reaching. So Census will be on the hook to resolve that issue. It is. So there is a bit of a, I want to call it an anomaly, but a tough spot geographically with some steep hills, and we got a bit of a shadow effect. Census did have topography information available to them when they did the network design for us. So should be no excuse. They'll have to address that.
So are we reading those manually then?
Yes, some of those are still coming in occasionally. So that's good, but anything that is missed would have to be read manually. And then here's a picture that we snagged. This was shared to me by the metering department. Draw your attention to those metal bars. It looks like cut up coat hangers that are bridging the gap between the high side and low side there. That is a classic meter tamper situation. And so we were able to catch this because if a customer pulls a meter out of the socket, we get an alarm about that. And so because we knew we weren't doing any of the work in the area, our metering department was able to go out and do an investigation and find this issue. Not long. Because we get that alarm as soon as it's pulled. Yeah, we get that pretty quickly.
Oh, so this was a smart meter.
This was a smart meter.
Pulled off.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So this is one of those good situations that's facilitated by our new meter technology. and being able to identify when somebody's been doing things they shouldn't.
So that's interesting, because when the meter was installed, obviously this situation didn't exist.
Correct. So
maybe because we sent them a warning.
That's my speculation, is that we send them plenty of notes saying we're coming, that that gives them a chance to pull some of that out. But yeah.
Yeah, this is a case where a customer tried to outsmart a smart meter.
I know. It's like a bit, this one is smart.
Did you wait to say that?
Okay.
Is that something that's turned over to authorities?
I believe we handle this most of the time internally. I will have to look to my customer service friends.
Fees are added to the account.
Oh, tampering.
Okay. Yeah, I remember I've just been on the commission, we had someone complaining about how much back charges they were arguing about how much power they had stolen. They said it wasn't as much as what we had claimed.
Wow.
It's
and that's the update I have for the board today. Are there any other questions I can answer?
No. Yeah.
Thank you.
Good report. Thank you. Great job. Okay, last on the list is, and for certainly not least, Washington Quincy Program, and Suzanne Frew. Good morning, Suzanne.
Morning. Good morning. Thank you. It has been a little while since I've been in front of the commission, and I'm going to...
We don't bite.
That's good to know.
Microphone.
Yes, I'll just forward and back. Okay. Yeah. I'm just going to move this closer to you as well. Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. Today, I wanted to provide an overview of Washington's Clean Fuels Program. This is for information only. There's no actions that we're requesting today. So I'll start off. This is legislation that's been passed, and I'll provide an overview of that. It is a market-based credit program. So I'll run through how credits are allocated and some of the expenditure requirements that are there, as well as introduce you to the implementation team on this program for the PUD, and then a little insight into what's next. So this was a legislative action in 2021. House Bill 1091 was passed. It was implemented in 2023, and then by 2024, they put in a second House Bill of 1409. So you can see how dynamic it is changing. And 1409 will go into effect in 2026. This is a transportation fuel-based program, and it sets a carbon intensity for those transportation fuels through 2038. When I say transportation fuels, this covers everything from diesel, gasoline, renewable fuels, as well as electricity. And that's where we come in as a fuel. I mentioned it's a market-based program, so there are credits being generated, and there are deficit holders. This is a program that is now on the entire West Coast. It started in California as the low carbon fuel standard. You may be familiar, that's been in place about 20 years. Oregon followed with their clean fuels program, been in place about 10 years. British Columbia was about a year before us. And just recently, New Mexico has joined with the fuel program. The latest, I mentioned before, 1409, it actually drops down the carbon intensity levels. It also extends the program term and modifies some of the penalties. This is an older picture. It's from 1091, so it's been updated. But this really helped me sort of understand the dynamics of this program. You'll see on that left side, it goes to 20%. What 1409 did is it now goes up to 55%. So it takes the 2017 carbon intensity of fuels, and it slowly, you'll see a gradual decline year after year until 2038. Everyone with the fuel below that line is generating credits. Everyone with fuels above the line are regulated and have deficits, so they are purchasing those credits. It applies to anyone that produces fuels, uses fuels, or imports fuels. And so that, like I said, it helped me understand sort of that market of what's going back and forth and where the money is being generated. I'll stop there for just a brief. Is there any questions, or I'll just keep rolling through?
Questions?
I don't have any.
No, but I do appreciate you explaining this to me.
Oh.
Yeah, this is so great.
Okay. Keep going here. So we are below the line. We actually have a very low carbon intensity, as you may be aware, with ours. So we generate a significant number of credits. There are two ways we are accumulating those credits. The first one is commercial credits. That is a very small amount, but it does come from all of our PUD-owned chargers. So the ones out front in the electric building here, up at Arlington, out at Ops, and a few other locations that we have. On a quarterly basis, we report the amount of kilowatt hours used at those chargers, and Ecology allocates us credits on a quarterly basis. Where a majority of our credits are being generated is on the residential side. And these are from our customers who own electric vehicles. Every twice a year, what Ecology does is looks out there and it sees how many electric vehicles we have, what type they have. It's actually a pretty complex formula they use to calculate it. But essentially, it's the electric vehicles within our service territory. And then they drop those credits into our account in their system. Those credits that we have can be sold at any time. And all of that is recorded within Ecology's system. As of the middle of June, we had 178,168. Which is mostly those residential credits. I put a conservative market value. The market is actually above $20, but for that amount, it's at $3.6 million. So actual market value, we're probably over $4 million. We just finished our first credit sales for $260,000 and have a few in the works. We're participating. And this is the first credit clearance market they have. But once a year, they have a special market for those deficit holders that did not meet compliance in the previous year. So they're basically out of compliance. And we are selling credits in that market right now. So the expenditures from those like I said, a majority of ours residential. There are four utilities we have special requirements. So if there's other credit holders, let's say Electrify America that has charging stations, they can actually sell credits and they have no obligation to spend it anywhere, no obligation to report it, nothing like that, just the utilities. So we do... They're holding us to a different standard in a way. So the revenue on the commercial, that's the small amount we have. It just says that we have to spend it on electric transportation. No reporting requirements, but just an area of spending. On the residential side, it is very specific on where we spend that money. And it also has annual reporting requirements along with it. And I have the next slide, I'll go into a little more detail on those areas. But essentially, 50% of our revenue is on programs put together by Washington Department of Transportation and the Department of Ecology. It's pretty broad, but it is a list. And then 30% is by geographic boundary. This is a federal and state boundaries that they have. And then the remaining 20% is really our choice as long as it is related to electric transportation. Along with that, I mentioned Department of Ecology. We have an annual basis. We report back to them for credit transactions. We report back to them on the expenditures so that we're in compliance with that 50, 30, 20. And then we also provide details of the customer programs by project. And also what they're really looking for is who's benefiting from this. Where are those dollars going? A lot of this, kind of a driving force behind some of this, is the transportation electrification strategy that the state approved in 2024. You'll see a lot of alignment there.
So can you go back to the previous slide? So do we already have projects in each of these three categories we're doing anyway that we can use this money to fund, or do we have to fund new things? So do we already have that 50%? Are we already doing some projects like that, or
we don't currently, and it's all of this we've been working with the utilities, working with ecology, and since it's a new program, a lot of things are not set in stone, but what they have given us indication of is they don't necessarily have to be brand new projects. They do have a caveat that nothing can be started before the program took effect, so nothing prior to 2023. They have said that it can support existing things. All utilities have transportation electrification program plans,
right,
which we have.
Right.
So it if it supports that, they've said, they've kind of given it a thumbs up at that point. But this will be the first year, so 2025 will be the first year that we actually spend our clean fuels program dollars, and we'll be reporting on that in 2026. So the three areas that ecology has defined is the first one. I mentioned their real goal is to reduce greenhouse gases with a priority in low income areas. Ideally, this is electric vehicles. That meets a lot of the things, EV chargers. Like I said, it's a pretty broad list. So we're not that concerned about sort of niche type of programs. Category two is a minimum of 30% of that revenue. And this is within this geographic boundary set by either a federal EPA non-attainment area, Washington Department of Health goes back to air quality, or the Department of Ecology. The second part of that that is really key is it either has to be within or it has to be benefiting those areas. So what is a prime solution to that is either like a delivery vehicle or something like a school bus. They don't necessarily have to be located in that area, but on a daily basis, they're going in and out of those communities and would really benefit from electrification in that instance. And then the final category was that maximum 20%. It is back to anything of our choice. And this could be a customer make ready situation or infrastructure projects that are specifically tied to electric transportation.
So within our service territory, what are those designated areas roughly?
We are working on a geographic map because they overlap, but first cut Unfortunately, it's a majority of our service territory falls into those areas.
Okay.
So it's a pretty broad area. Once more, that's why we're not not as concerned, because the programs that we have started planning, we would expect them to fall into those categories and be able to meet those requirements. So what we've done so far, this is kind of a where we're at right now, is we are registered in Ecology System for Utilities. It was voluntary, and we have been claiming commercial credits. The residential credits we've received for 2023 and 2024, and in the next couple weeks, we'll expect another bundle of credits for the first half of the year. We've also worked with our accounting and finance department, set up all of the accounting for revenue, expenditures, all of that to meet Department of Ecology's sort of complex reporting requirements. We developed a process to sell all of our credits and have executed that, tested it out, have a few, what I'd say, are minor lessons learned. We've refined it. For the next set of credit sales, worked with Power Supply Treasury. And then we have been doing our quarterly, first annual report was in April of this year. And then we have a contract with a consultant to help us develop our customer programs. And I want to spend just a little bit of time to introduce you to the implementation team here at the PUD. I have to say, these people have been just spectacular. This is something new. This is something the district has never done before, and we don't have anything we could borrow from. So a lot of it was learning more about the program and a lot of conversations back and forth to just find a way to make it work. Adam has been taking on the credit transactions, and Nathan on the financial side for that finance part of it. We worked with Michael Bixler and the master data team on the accounting and compliance for this. And then Sherry Miller is working on the customer program development. Shane is responsible for the reporting. And my role has been on the legislative policy, and we have a very strong relationship with Ecology that has been really beneficial. So to round this out, this is the last slide and what's coming up next. We have a customer grant program that's under development. We're expecting it to roll out in the fall of this year. And Adam has been continuing the credit sales to build that amount of money that we'll be able to return to our customers. There is a draft rulemaking process that was on hold because of the new legislation that recently just popped back up, and they're going to finalize that by September. So we're in the middle of that. We do have some comments on that that we'll be submitting. There's an additional rulemaking that's going to start right after that on the new Bill 1409, because it has to be in effect by January of 2026. The one thing is, we do expect this to be continuing to change. It's a fuel market. We're talking about, all of the oil companies are kind of on the other side of us. And so it's also across the entire West Coast. We've seen changes in California affect us, affect our market. So we are preparing and expect it to be a dynamic type of program. We will be back here in front of you in the fall with that customer program when we have the details, and to share that with you. And then on an annual basis, we have a report to Ecology of the credit transactions, the programs, who's benefiting those, and we'll be back to share those with you. So any additional questions?
I have no questions. However, I do so appreciate you going through this with us, because this has always been something that's kind of know what it is, but I'm not quite sure how it works. So I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate the presentation as well. It's a lot of work, right? So who is our consulting? You mentioned something that you're working aligned with consulting for something like that.
It is Resource Innovations, and they are also working with Puget Sound Energy as well. So their expertise is setting up programs for these clean fuels programs in the states.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. First off, I'll echo what Commissioner Wolf said. I didn't really understand this before. Now I get it. So I guess my question is, so what if our strategy was spending the money? It's not like we can spend it on things we might be doing anyway. And we're also going to be developing new programs. What's the mix? What's the Not really free money.
There's a lot of things around it, but it is, these are credits being generated by our ratepayers, by the people, and we really felt strongly that we need to return that to them, rather than if we didn't participate, the credits would go to a state hired third party, and the money would likely be out of Snohomish County.
Right.
So it's really to keep it in. It is a market-based program, and we have seen extreme volatility in those prices. So within a year, it was anywhere from $15 a credit to $150 a credit. And that makes a significant difference on what is coming in. So I think we are more conservative in our planning, because we cannot spend the money until we have the money. So that's also a good part of it for the district, is we're not spending district dollars. We're spending those dollars that are coming in from the credit sales. And our planning is short term. I'll just be honest. And that is because of the market. We've seen that volatility. And so we're probably, you know, a year or two out, just saying we have X amount of dollars, and what can we do with that in the best way?
So does it allow us to recover administrative costs?
Yes, it does. Okay. It has. We're still trying to define that, but all program implementation costs we know are 100% covered. We've got a 10% admin limit or something like that. So we've set up a lot of different accounts to track all of our dollars and be able to, report back that we've used all of those.
But that hasn't been set up yet, or is it in the legislation? Covering administrative costs.
It is, but it's not defined. And that's why we've really, from prior to the legislation even being passed, we were working with ecology. We put together, a group of utilities to really sort of stand up for ourselves and what was in the best interest of the utilities, because we were against oil companies and vehicle manufacturers and the rest of them. So we've been working with them to define all of that in the rulemaking. And I have to say, the administrative cost, there is no document anywhere that says specifically what can be in there and what can't. But we have a pretty good idea. And so it's a back and forth with ecology through all of this implementation.
But we're assured that we'll be reimbursed. I can understand the record keeping and the importance of that, but are we assured that we're going to be receiving
reimbursement for administrative costs. Is
that it's not, so it's not reimbursement, and that's kind of the key part here, and actually the good part of this is we cannot spend money until we have money.
Oh.
So that $260,000, kind of the first sale, that is dollars that, you know, we're going against. So before we put out a grant, all of our cost, literally that has to be, it's like a checking account, maybe is a better way to put it, is we have this bucket of money and we keep charging against it.
It's all,
that makes sense, or did I confuse it?
No, I can't.
Okay.
I'm confused now.
Okay.
So if we do a project, let's say we do an electric school bus project and we do grants, does a car staff cost that it takes to administer that grant, does that get covered?
100%.
So we have enough money to cover it.
Yes, I have a question. Well, that's very good. We have the intention to give back to the customers, right? But could you elaborate a simple example? How is the plan, how you're planning to do that?
So I mentioned our first customer program will be a grant program.
Okay.
And I don't have the details right now, it's in the middle of being developed, but the intent is to put out an RFP and have customers basically send in their ideas and the cost of those programs. So it could be an electric school bus, it could be an EV charger at a multifamily complex, it could be you know, something with the city of Linwood, or any of our cities could apply. And then we take the money that we already have, and we would then award those projects.
Okay. Do we collaborate already with Community Transit? I mentioned that because Community Transit launched almost 3 years ago a program in Linwood. They started that program. Now it's in Lake Stevens too, I think so. Or Arlington, I don't remember, but it is like in only one area specifically is how it started in Linwood, and I don't remember the program name, and it's at the top of my head, but you download the app, and it's, if you live in the downtown of Linwood and you take that car, and
it's like a
So my point thank you. Sip. So, and you know, it's really, really appreciate for the people because you pay minimum cost compared with a Lyft or with other transportation apps there. So I mentioned that because could be a win-win and nice program to partner with them too, because they already utilize those cars and transportation. So, I mean, it's that's the reason I asked.
Yeah, I think we can't. So at this time, we're just focusing on the grant program. So we'd be able to, they would be able to apply to us for, you know, like an electric vehicle to add to their fleet or something like that. But also, it may be something in the future when we have sort of a larger, we're very optimistic on this one, that we would be able to do something different there.
Thank you.
Fascinating. Thank you for educating us.
Fantastic job, Suzanne.
Thanks.
Okay, that is it for the presentations.
Next up, we have our general manager report. Our report for us?
Yeah, I got about an hour's worth of stuff. Sure. Couple items. CorpCom, the PUD, participated in the Everett Pride event on Saturday, June 21st. Also on June 29th, the PUD attended the Granite Falls Sunday Farmers Market to start engaging customers on knowledge and awareness around the public safety power shutoff. The 2025 Community Energy Fund, and then internal event this year. This was the Run for Warmth the last couple of years, and we have decided not to continue that. So in this interim year, until we have figured out a different community program, we're going to do a internal energy fund, and it's just a employee participation steps program with the goal of raising $5,000 for our customers and assistance. Going on around the district from July 9th through 30th, employees are encouraged to complete at least one 10-minute mobility session. Daily participation is ideal and supports joint health, injury prevention, and long-term physical wellness. District also welcomed 29 summer interns and summer hires across multiple departments, including engineering, IT, human resources, corporate communications, warehouse, substation, power supply, water, transportation department, and generation.
That's quite a number.
Yeah, and doing great. I've had a chance to talk to a few, and yeah, they're engaged and excited about the projects that they get to participate in. Gives great opportunities for our next generation of workers to learn about our utility and explore potential career paths. And then also wanted to mention a week or so ago, Brenda White and I had lunch with the Tulalip Chairwoman Gobin and Santana Sheldon, who is the Tulalip Board of Directors Office Director. Fantastic lunch, fantastic meeting, great conversation. Really excited about continuing to build that relationship with them. And if you recall, we did the we took Chairwoman Govan up in the bucket truck last year during the holiday celebration, and she got to put the star on the top of the tree. She was super excited about that and wants to go even bigger this year. So yeah, looking forward to see what she has in store and
going
bigger. Now I don't know if that means a taller tree and we got to bring a bigger taller truck or what, but you know, she's super excited, and again, it just demonstrates the spirit of the partnership that we are creating with Tulalip. So that's it. Happy to answer any questions.
No, but thank you for the update.
I'll say thank you for working on that.
Very important.
Okay, next item six, items for individual consideration. 6A, consideration of a resolution creating a plan of financing for the acquisition and construction of certain additions, betterments, and improvements to and renewals, replacements, and extensions to the district's electric system, authorizing the issuance and sale of not to exceed $450 million aggregate principal amount of electric system revenue and refunding bonds, Series 2025 in one or more series, providing for the terms of the 2025 bonds, approving the execution and delivery of certain documents and agreements, and providing for certain other matters related thereto. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay, we have Lauren Way available to answer any questions regarding the resolutions. I'll first ask if there's any comments from the public regarding resolution. Please raise your hand. Not seeing any hands raised. Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions?
No, we've been very thorough on this.
I will call for a motion or call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion passed unanimously. Next, 6B, consideration of a resolution creating a plan of refinancing for the acquisition and construction and of certain additions, betterments, and improvements to and renewals, replacements, and extensions of the district generation system, authorizing the issuance and sale of not to exceed $55 million aggregate principal amount of generation system revenue refunding bonds, series 2025 in one or more series, providing for the terms of the 2025 bonds, approving the execution and delivery of certain documents and agreements, and providing for certain other matters related thereto. I will call for a motion.
I move approval.
One way is still available to answer any questions or any questions or comments from the public regarding the resolution. Please raise your hand. Hands raised. Commissioners, do you have any questions?
No,
I have no questions.
I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next, 6C, consideration of a resolution amending the district's customer service regulations for electric service. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Ryan Newby, available to answer any questions regarding the resolution. Are there any questions or comments from the public regarding the resolution? Please raise your hand. See any hands made. Are there any questions or comments from you, commissioners?
I have none.
We were briefed at our last meeting on June 17th.
Sure. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next, item 7, commission business. 7A, commission reports. What are your reports, commissioners?
I have none.
None either. Next is 7B, our commissioner events calendar. Are there any changes to the commissioner events calendar?
Oh, I'm sorry. No.
Sounds like none. Okay. Next is 7C, our May 2025 district performance dashboard. Are there any questions or comments from you commissioners?
I have a question.
One that's 7D, our 2025 Treasury Budget and Project Status Report. There are a lot of available there for any questions. Are there any questions or comments from commissioners on this item?
I have no questions.
I'm looking at the graphic on page 4, page 659 of the packet at the days in reserve, and I'm really liking that trend. So that's great. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Next is 7E, the 2026 Commissioner Budget. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments about the commission budget? It's on page 672. Are there any comments from the public regarding the commission budget? Please raise your hands. See any hands raised? Questions or comments, commissioners, on the budget?
No.
No,
I don't have it. Okay. It should be known, should be mentioned though, that the commission also receives support in a number of areas from the entire organization. These are things that are discreetly related to the board.
Yeah. Okay. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion passed unanimously. Next is item 8, our governance planning calendar, 8A. Are there any changes to the governance planning calendar?
Well, did we add what's earlier a presentation? Would that be appropriate for this calendar?
Yeah, it'll be.
How that then works.
Yep, we're going to add that. I've already been messaging with Christy, and it'll be added for the next meeting.
Snowspark, okay. Because I thought there's a quarterly review coming up in I think, August or September. I'm wondering if maybe that just makes the most sense.
Yeah, there's been some chatter.
It's like the project's not going to stop because we haven't watched the graphic.
And the governance calendar is always ever changing, but there'll be some more changes at the next meeting as well.
Okay. Anything else the governance planning calendar? Is there any further business to come before the board? Okay, hearing none, it is 11:13 and our meeting is adjourned.